Hello, everybody. It's Sam from Financial Samurai. And in this podcast, we're going to talk about the various warning signs to look out for before buying property. So I know a lot of you guys have housing fever. There seems to be housing fever everywhere in the big cities across America and around the world. But just be aware that there are some cracks in the housing foundation with more supply coming online, buyer fatigue, and so forth. So I really want to use this podcast to help you guys look for things that will cause you a great amount of headache in the future if you end up buying the property and miss them. And this podcast will also provide you some more firepower when you're negotiating in your contract to get the best price possible. So let me be clear that selling a property is super stressful. It's much more stressful than buying a property. If you lose out on buying a property, it's okay, there's always another one. But as a seller, you're stuck with your one and only property, and if people like screw with you or get into contract and delay the closing and all that stuff, it really kind of messes with you and it could ultimately hurt the final selling price of your home. So as a seller, your goal is to make your property look as good as possible in as cost-efficient manner as possible. Therefore, the cheapest and easiest things to do are paint, change light fixtures, clean, obviously, and redo the floors. You can also do some light landscaping as well. So before I sold my property, I spent about $2,600 to redo all the floors. And man, they looked great and they smelled great. So instantly when you walked into the house, you're like, wow, smells like a new house. But obviously it wasn't because it was built in 1926. Also, I spent several days painting two rooms because they really, really needed some paint. And that cost about, I don't know, $100, but really it took like 8 hours of my time. So maybe I should have hired a painter as well. And then I did some landscaping in the back for about $1,000. And that was worth it to me for a total of about $4,000 because I finally got a seller to come in and say, hey, this is not bad. And they kind of looked beyond some of the issues of my house. So let me highlight several things, several warning signs and tricks realtors and sellers do to make the buyer believe the house is nicer than it really is. So one warning sign is exterior cracks and tilts. So the inside can smell fresh from that wonderful floor varnish and paint, but the exterior could cost you a fortune if you don't pay attention. Walk around the house and make sure there aren't cracks larger than a quarter inch wide. Because if there are, it could mean that there's some foundation issues. You should bring a leveler, preferably with a laser, and make sure that every single side is level and not too tilted. Because houses do settle, you know, over time, especially the old houses that are 50 to 100 years old. But settling more than, let's say, several inches, I mean, I think that's a real big problem, especially if the house is relatively new, i.e. within 20 or 30 years. So you really got to inspect the exterior of the home very carefully. In the post, I highlight this one house that sold for something like $1.4 million. It was a fixer in 2017. It looked nice. And then in 2018, the house was completely demolished because once they started opening up the sidings, they saw a lot of rot and it was just unsafe. So they had to demolish the whole house. And I think that probably cost well over $100,000 to do. So exterior, focus on the exterior because the interior is where they can trick you a little bit easier, as you'll hear more in this podcast. Two, ownership history. It's really important not to see multiple owners over a short period of time. It's the same thing with a job resume. If you see someone with a new job every year or every even 2 years, I think that's a warning sign. Like, why would you bother hiring that person because they're just going to leave for something nicer? So same thing with home ownership. The average length of home ownership today is almost 9 years. So that's increased from about 7 years several years ago. So high turnover, I consider, is any duration 3 years or less. So if you look at the ownership history and there are new buyers every 3 years or less, that's a warning sign. It really is, because it's really hard to truly know what it's like to live in the home until after you've taken possession, after you've moved in all your stuff. You know, my biggest fear about buying my old San Francisco rental property was that it was on a busy street, next to the busiest street in all of San Francisco. That busiest street had three lanes going in each direction, so six lanes total. So my girlfriend at the time, we basically did the stakeout, let's see, maybe like 6 or 7 nights at night, you know, during the day. whatever, just to make sure that we would be okay with the noise. And even after we took ownership of the home, we discovered we had underestimated the constant honking, the rattling manhole cover. This was a crazy story. This manhole cover would rattle every single time a car would drive over it. So think about how annoying that is. We had to call the city 60 times over a 10-month period for them to finally pave it over. Even when they did, it kind of came loose again, so they had to redo it. And there's also tremors from, you know, big buses and cars or trucks that just boom, 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 just wake you up, or you can feel it. So this was something that was disappointing to us, and we ended up spending $10,000 for sound deadening windows that were installed behind the original windows, which we also replaced with dual panes for another $10,000. Okay, three, look for water damage concealed by paint. Water damage is a killer for homes. If you conceal water damage areas with paint, you trap the moisture in the walls that will likely lead to black mold, and black mold is obviously unhealthy to breathe. So you want to look very carefully underside of sinks, base of tubs and toilets, and particularly on the lower left and lower right corners of window sills. I had a big problem with this. During my 10 years of ownership of the house I sold, twice I hired a handyman to cut out the wet and damp sheetrock and replace it with new sheetrock, mud, sand, and then paint. And in preparation for my sale, I also did some of my own patching and sanding work as well, because the sheetrock was moist again. So I always had these leaks during the winter, and I don't know where they came from. Probably from the top of the windowsill, but I just couldn't get out there, and I didn't want to pay someone, I don't know, money to do it. I guess I was too cheap. Nevertheless, I did all that stuff, and I still had to disclose the leaks in my disclosure package, so they couldn't use that lack of information to back out. So I would suggest bringing a little needle and poking holes where you think it's soft, because that'll tell you whether there's a lot of moisture trapped behind the walls. Okay, 4 out of 10. Uneven or bouncy floors. Always bring a marble to an open house and place that marble around different areas of the floor of each room, especially the rooms that you feel are uneven. The older the house, the more important it is to do the marble test to see how uneven the floors are, because houses will settle over time. Not only that, sometimes there will be a lot of deflection. So deflection is where a floor sags on the sides because the support columns aren't strong enough, or they just settled. And deflection is really, really hard to fix, because you got to rip out the entire floor, find matching floor, and then you've got to varnish the floor to match your other floor. Before you do that, you got to redo the support beams and all the joists and stuff. It's a disaster. It takes a long time, and it costs a lot of money, and it's really, really a hassle and dirty. So deflected floors, bouncy floors, I would be very, very cautious. 5. Room fresheners. Stinky people wear deodorant or perfume. We know this. Therefore, stinky houses are often sprayed or decorated with scented candles or papuchery. So your mission is to find out whether there is an insidious odor emanating somewhere in the house. It could be a leaky pipe, mold, sewage, etc. Always beware of room fresheners. 6. Beware when music is playing in each room. The agent seller is trying to mask the noisiness outside. I know, because this is exactly what I did when I had potential buyers come over. I turned on the central AC fan, so it created this white noise hum. I think I put maybe, you know, my iPhone music to jazz in the master bedroom to also drown out the noise a little bit. But I think savvy buyers were smart enough to say, hey, can you turn off the music? We want to hear how loud it is in this bedroom. So insist that all music and the AC be turned off so you can determine the noise level for yourself. And that's what we ultimately did, because again, as a seller, you are kind of at the mercy of the buyer's timetable and time frame. You know, you get into contract and they have like a financing contingency, an inspection contingency. They can back out of a lot of things if you don't properly disclose everything. All right, 7, areas the seller won't let you see. If a seller won't allow you to see the gimp room underneath the master bedroom, be wary. There might be a dead body under there. There might be something. I don't know. Just beware if the seller won't let you see something, because obviously they're hiding something if they don't want you to see it. 8, sellers providing incentives to waive inspection objection rights. There's no reason to waive those rights unless there's something big to hide. So, obviously, another red flag. 9, no permits for work done. You should always ask to see the report of residential building record, also known as the 3R report. The 3R report is like a report card for your property. If the seller says they added a new deck, the new deck should be in the 3R report. If it's not, then there is a chance the deck was not built up to code and may therefore be unsafe. So people often do things without permit to save on the permit fee and also to save on the subsequent property tax increase, because property tax is based on the value of your home. And if you improve the value of your home with a remodel or extension or whatever, you're going to have higher property taxes for life. So there are some things that really don't need a permit. I mean, it's kind of a gray area, such as remodeling a bathroom. Let's say you're just bashing out the tile and replacing the sink and all that. Like, do you really need a permit for that? I mean, it's maybe. You probably want to insist on it if it's a really high price point house and if you're paying a premium. But for me, I don't know. If you're replacing tile and changing the sink and the toilet, I think it'll be okay. But who knows? Sometimes you might not do the pipes right, and you might have to break open the tiles to get to that shower pipe, and that would be a disaster. So better to have permits than not. And then finally, this is an interesting one. Spray painted hedges. So I was walking down the street, you know, just minding my own business, going for an exercise after writing a post, and lo and behold, I saw an open house sign. So I was like, oh, open house sign, cool. And there I saw the hedge, really nicely manicured, but it was spray painted on the bottom, and you'll see it in the post, this weird green that totally doesn't look natural and doesn't match the hedge as well. So you've got to wonder, if they're taking this shortcut, and if they're, it's just so ugly and it's so fake looking, if they're taking this shortcut, what other shortcuts could they be taking? So curb appeal is obviously really, really important, and I understand why they did it, but come on. Spraying a hedge, you know, fake stuff mixed with real stuff. You know, this is not you buying a Versace bag or shades and then matching it with a fake Bolex watch. You know, this is not mix and match. You got to make it, you got to do the landscaping right, especially the higher the price of your home. So really, folks, be super vigilant with your inspection. Every single time you go to the house, whether it's the open house or a private visit, put on your inspector's hat. Pretend you are the inspector. Test the electricity. Go to the electricity box and see if everything is properly labeled. That kind of detail is really, really important. Electricity, don't mess with that. That's dangerous. Fires happen from bad wiring. Turn on all the faucets in the kitchen, in the sink. Flush all the toilets. Listen if there are any, you know, like water hammer sounds or any leaks. Look for those leaks underneath those windows, which are the most vulnerable points. Look up at the ceiling and see if there are any bubbles or different textured paint that might be covering up a leak. This is something really common as well. So you definitely want to bring a notepad, your needle, a leveler, and a marble. And then if you come equipped with this, you're going to find some stuff. A good disclosure package will highlight all the problems of the property. It's required by law by the seller and the selling agent. But it's up to you to verify whether the problems are what they say they are and not something worse. And you should also make it a mission of yours to find even more problems to use them as leverage when negotiating. You really have leverage after the inspection. I know this as a seller and as a buyer. And then finally, after coming up with a detailed list that needs fixing, you've also got to come up with a detailed remodeling budget if you plan to redo the bathrooms, kitchen, and so forth. So for my house, my kitchen and a couple of bathrooms hadn't been remodeled in 25 years. My HVAC unit was 20 years old and needed replacing. Further, my roof was 12 years old, which is not that old, but it had a couple of weak points, specifically in the light well, which needed something of a professional to come up and do something with it instead of me just going up there and spray painting it with a roof patch. So I didn't want to spend $200,000 to $500,000 updating the house. Probably not $500,000. You know, $200,000 to $300,000, especially because it was a rental. And if I spent that, you know, not only would I have spent that money, I would have to go through the whole planning department, permit process, inspection process. I mean, that stuff is just a nightmare, especially here in San Francisco. So I said, you know what? I've got the most use out of the house. Did it as a rental for a couple of years. Let's sell it and just simplify life. So I'm really happy I sold to reduce my home ownership headaches. The sale proceeds have all been reinvested in completely passive investments. They're probably not going to do as well as if I just held it, but man, I really like optimizing for time. So I really wish all of you guys good luck with your property purchase. Really take this podcast and the post to heart. Really, really look in detail about all the problems that could go wrong with your house. Because I guarantee you, even if you buy a new construction house, there's going to be problems in probably 3 years. I promise you, something is always breaking. Something is loose. Something is leaky. So just be really, really diligent. And again, I wish you guys good luck because it's not the easiest thing to own property, even though it's one of my favorite asset classes to build wealth over time. Thanks so much, everyone.